Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Why Marx Was Right is a 2011 nonfiction polemic by Terry Eagleton, one of the best-known Marxist literary critics writing in English. The book is not a beginner's introduction to Marx, but a defense of Marxism against a set of familiar criticisms that have made it seem obsolete, authoritarian, reductionist, or historically failed. Eagleton structures the book around 10 common objections, and argues that many of them rely on oversimplified readings of Marx or on selective comparisons with capitalist society. Written in a combative but accessible style, it aims to restore Marx as a serious thinker for readers interested in politics, economics, ideology, and social theory. The book belongs to the tradition of intellectual rebuttal. It is less about teaching Marx from scratch than about showing why Marx still matters in a world shaped by inequality, crisis, and recurring debates about capitalism. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, a direct rebuttal to the standard anti-Marx arguments. The book is organized as a response to objections that are widely used against Marxism, including the claims that it is outdated, economically simplistic, politically dangerous, or utopian. Eagleton does not merely restate Marx's doctrine. He tries to show why these objections often depend on caricature. That gives the book its polemical energy. Rather than treating Marxism as a relic of the 20th century, Eagleton insists that it remains relevant because the problems Marx analyzed, such as exploitation, class division, and crises within capitalism, have not disappeared. This structure makes the book easy to follow, since each chapter tackles a separate criticism. It also means the reader sees Marxism as a contested field of interpretation rather than a fixed creed. The value of this approach is argumentative clarity. Eagleton is not asking the reader to accept Marx on authority, but to reconsider the assumptions behind common anti-Marx positions. Secondly, capitalism is not treated as neutral, but as a rival system with its own distortions. One of Eagleton's central strategies is to turn criticisms of Marxism back toward capitalism. When critics say Marxism produces repression, abstraction, or instrumental thinking, Eagleton asks whether capitalism is free of the same or worse tendencies. This move is important because it prevents capitalism from being treated as a natural baseline against which Marxism looks extreme. Instead, capitalism is presented as a historically specific system with its own moral and social costs. That includes commodification, inequality, and the reduction of human relations to market logic. Eagleton's defense of Marx is therefore comparative. Even if a criticism captures something real about Marxist history or rhetoric, it may also describe capitalist society itself. The effect is to shift the debate from idealized images of a perfect market versus a flawed Marxism to a more symmetrical analysis of competing systems. This is one of the book's most recognizable argumentative habits and one of the reasons it appeals to readers already skeptical of capitalist orthodoxy. Thirdly, historical determinism and the charge of inevitability are challenged. A major target of the book is the accusation that Marxism reduces history to an automatic script, in which economics mechanically determines every political and cultural outcome. Eagleton argues against that simplified view by presenting Marx as a thinker concerned with contradiction, agency, and historical movement rather than rigid prophecy. This matters because the determinism charge has often been used to dismiss Marxism as intellectually crude. Eagleton's response is that Marx's work is more nuanced social structures shape possibilities, but they do not erase human action or political struggle. In this reading, history is not a closed machine, but a field of pressures and conflicts. The book uses this point to defend Marx against the claim that his theory cannot account for change, reform, or contingency. By doing so, Eagleton also preserves a space for politics itself. If history were fully predetermined, revolutionary practice would be meaningless. His Marx is valuable precisely because it leaves room for struggle, organization, and decisions made under concrete conditions. Fourthly, Marxism is presented as a humanist critique, not just an economic doctrine. Eagleton emphasizes that Marx is not only about wages, production, or class structure, but also about human fulfillment, estrangement, and the quality of social life. This humanist dimension is important because Marx is often reduced to an economist or a prophet of material forces. In the book, Marxism becomes a critique of how capitalism shapes the senses, labor, desire, and the possibilities of collective life. Eagleton wants readers to see that Marx's concern is not merely with ownership patterns, but with the forms of human experience produced under different systems. That allows him to defend Marxism against the charge that it reduces everything to economics. Instead, economics becomes the means through which broader questions are raised. What kinds of people do social systems create? What kinds of solidarity do they permit? And how do they affect freedom and creativity? This gives the book a philosophical breadth that explains why it attracts readers interested in literature, culture, and ethics as much as in politics. Lastly, the book defends Marxism while exposing the limits of received interpretations. A recurring feature of Eagleton's writing is his insistence that many attacks on Marxism are really attacks on simplified versions of it. He suggests that Marx's own texts are often more open-ended than later orthodoxies, and that this openness has made them easy to distort. At the same time, the book does not function as a careful historical reconstruction of Marx's theory. It is a selective, argumentative intervention, and that is part of both its strength and its limitation. Its strength lies in its willingness to challenge complacent anti-Marx assumptions and to make Marx intellectually available again. Its limitation is that readers who want a systematic introduction to Marx's original texts, economic theory, or political history may find the book incomplete. Eagleton assumes a degree of familiarity and often writes as if the reader already knows the debates he is entering. That makes the book best suited to readers who want a critical defense of Marxism rather than an introductory textbook. Its real contribution is to reopen discussion, not to settle it. In conclusion, Why Marx Was Right is best suited to readers who already know something about Marx and want a forceful, contemporary defense of his relevance. It will be especially useful for students of political theory, literary criticism, cultural studies, and anyone interested in how Marxist arguments are made against the usual objections. The main benefit of the book is intellectual rather than instructional. It helps readers see how anti-Marx assumptions are built, how capitalism is often treated as a hidden norm, and why debates about class, commodification, and historical change still matter. Eagleton writes with wit and confidence, so the book is more engaging than many academic defenses of Marxism, even when readers do not fully agree with him. What distinguishes it from more neutral or introductory books is its adversarial purpose. It does not try to present Marx as a distant historical figure or as one theory among many. Instead, it treats Marxism as a live argument worth defending in public. That makes the book provocative, selective, and sometimes uneven, but also memorable and highly readable for the right audience. If you would like to support Terry Eagleton, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.